On this 18th day of May 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, entitled General History, Chapter 20, Pure Devotional Service, text number 29. Proktena bhakti yogena,
proktena bhakti yogena,
bhajato masa krin mune, Kama radaya nashyanti,
Kama radaya nashyanti,
Sarve mahi vidistite,
Sarve mahi vidistite.
Translation: when an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through loving devotional service as described by me, his heart becomes firmly situated in me. Thus all material desires within the heart are destroyed. Purport: the material senses are engaged in gratifying the concoctions of the mind, causing many types of material desires to become prominent, one after another. One who constantly engages in the devotional service of the Lord, by hearing and chanting the Lord's transcendental glories with firm faith, gets relief from the harassment of material desires. By serving the Lord, one becomes strengthened in the conviction that Sri Krishna is the only actual enjoyer, and all others are meant to share the Lord's pleasure through devotional service. A devotee of the Lord situates Sri Krishna on a beautiful throne within his heart, and there offers the Lord constant service. Just as the rising sun gradually eliminates all trace of darkness, the Lord's presence within the heart causes all material desires there to weaken and eventually disappear. The words mahi riddhisthite, when the heart is situated in me, indicate that an advanced devotee sees Lord Krishna not only within his own heart, but within the hearts of all living creatures. Thus, a sincere devotee who chants and hears the glories of Sri Krishna should not be discouraged by the remnants of material desires within the heart. He should faithfully wait for the devotional process to naturally purify the heart of all contamination. Om Jnana Timarangasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So Krishna is giving some very practical devotional service here, practical instruction on devotional service here. And in this particular verse, he's describing the situation of purity. And the next verse will hearken back to the first canto, which he repeats practically word for word what Suta Goswami told the sages of Naimisharanya after his series of verses beginning with Savai Pungsang Paro Dharma. But we'll read about that tomorrow. So the question, as was explained yesterday by Brijabasi Babu, why is there this definition of piety and impiety? Or how is it that Krishna could say that bhakti yoga, pure devotion service, is beyond piety and impiety? When piety and impiety are spoken of in the Shastra, which are themselves enunciated by the Supreme Lord, you see. So these kind of questions, similar questions arise in the Bhagavad Gita from Arjuna. You know, when Krishna talks about need to give up all material activity and simply serve him, and then you'll attain nirvana. He talks about it at the very end of the second chapter. And Arjuna says, well, if I just going to take nirvana and have buddhi and my intelligence fixed on you, then what do I need to fight this war for? Is it? And then Krishna goes through and describes karma yoga and the purifying a process beginning with simply acting for the Lord selflessly. So the idea here is that when you're speaking about the highest levels of devotion, they're beyond any, you know, mundane piety or impiety. And that's why people get confused by, say, the activities of the gopis, you know, in which they're going out in the middle of the night to meet Krishna, and Krishna's encouraging them. And Parikshit Maharaj, in that section describing the rasa dance, these five chapters, he asked that question on behalf of those who are trying to impose material considerations on transcendence. And it's a good question, because if someone wants to be dharmic, wants to be religious, the first thing you think of is, well, there's a strict moral code that's coming from the Bible, or it's coming from the Shastra, and we have that. Do's and don'ts. We talk about it all the time. And yet we find that seems seemingly violated by Krishna and the gopis in the rasa dance. You know, and there are other examples also where Krishna lies sometimes, you know, for a higher purpose. He broke his promise on the battlefield. So this can confuse one. So the question is, where does piety and impiety fit in? So there's something called sukriti and duskriti. Now, sukriti and duskriti, they can mean the activities that bring good reactions, good karmic reactions, or the activities that bring bad karmic reactions, or it can mean the reactions themselves. In the Vedic culture, oftentimes the result of something is identified with the cause. You know, you know what I'm saying? Just like you have the sun. Well, what do we know of the sun but heat and light? Without heat and light, there's no meaning to the sun. So oftentimes, when you see the sunlight, or you feel the nice warmth of the sun, you said, "Oh, I've got the sun on my back." Right? You'll say it like that. "Oh, now I'm out in the sun." No, not in the sun. We burn to a crisp. But because we identify the heat and light so closely with the cause, therefore, the very same word is often used. And in the Vedic literature, is the same thing is there. So sukriti and duskriti. Sukriti and duskriti. They're normally the describing materially good and materially bad reactions. And but in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to get rid of all of those. Certainly bad reactions, but also good reactions, so-called good reactions. Krishna speaks about that in the Bhagavad Gita. Buddhi yukto jahatiya ubhe sukrita duskrite. By practicing buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga, one negates both the good and bad reactions. Ubhe sukrita and duskrite. And he describes what so-called good sukriti can mean. It'll take you to the heavenly planets. He describes that in the ninth chapter, and also in the seventh chapter. But ninth chapter, he's very clear. They worship me by, you know, with this motive of going to the heavenly planets, getting good birth, and so forth. And therefore, they're very, you know, pious. They perform sacrifice. They observe all kinds of rituals, chant all kinds of mantras. And the idea is to go to the heavenly planets. So there are certain sacrifices, certain rituals, and certain mantras to chant in the Vedic literatures, in the Vedas, Karma Kanda section. That will take you to the heavenly planets. But Krishna says it's useless. Because the result of it is, okay, now I'm here. I'm in the heavenly planet. Now I can enjoy like anything. In the heavenly planets, you don't perform any more sacrifices. The process stops. You've reached the goal. You're, you know, the goal of the material. And then you enjoy like anything. Tetam bhuktva swarga lokam vishalam. Vishalam means very wide and broad enjoyment. They, those who worship this way, they go up there and they enjoy like anything. In swarga loka, the higher planets, heaven. What material heaven. But then chine punye martyalokam vishante. The word punya is also means this credit, this kind of pious credit that you get, you see, by performing these sacrifices and penances and mantras and sacrifices. So it's kind of money in the bank. It's kind of money in the etheric bank, if you will. And you can spend it. But eventually it becomes chine, means it becomes skinny, or in other words, it's depleted. So chine punye martya lokam vishanti, they come back again to this world of death. You know, that's the worst part, you know, this world, you gotta die, right? So evam chahi dhamma manupapanna gadaktam kama kama labande. So kama kama, those who are desirous of these material enjoyments, they simply go and come and they don't make any progress. You know, it's just a diversion. It's a big diversion. Krishna, he berates it in the beginning of the second chapter. You know, those who are Veda Bhadarata, the so-called knowers of the Vedas, they think there's nothing but this in the Vedas. These flowery words that describe how you can go to the heavenly planets. But Krishna derides that. He says, no, that is not the purpose of the Vedas. I'm the purpose of the Vedas. The only goal worth striving for is Krishna himself. Is liberation from this world entirely, going back to God, a reinstatement in devotional service where you don't return. So there's no return. So, how do we understand this punya and pap? Punya and pap, the sinful activity and the pious activity that produces duskriti and sukriti. You see? And so, there's another kind. Now, I'll give you another verse in which Krishna is described how these friends of Krishna who are playing, they have accumulated so much punya. It says, ittam satam brahma sukam bhutya dasam gitanam padadayavatena. Forget the third line. Nadaka dadakena swagas punya krita punya punja sakam vachadgu krita punya punya. Means that that same object, that that same entity, if you will, that's worshipped as the impersonalist, as the supreme Brahman, who is seen as the those who are in the mood of servitude for the Vishnu, as the supreme worshipable God, and who ordinary people see as a human being, he was playing with his friends who had accumulated heaps of pious credit. Probably it says in the Krishna book. Kuta punya punja. Punja means a large quantity. The same word punya is used there. So clearly we have to focus on this word punya, if it's being used in this way, to understand the import here. And what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, that there is different kinds of punya or sukriti. There's a bhogon mukhi sukriti. Unmukhi means to awaken or to produce. There's sukriti, materially pious activity, that produces greater enjoyment. That'll take you to the heavenly planets or a better place in this planet. That's a certain kind of sukriti. But there's also bhaktyun mukhi sukriti, pious activity that will awaken your bhakti. And that's what we're doing. All of the rules and regulations that we do, until we are cleared of all our material desires and sitting on the spontaneous platform, you know, there's do's and don'ts. Well, why do there have to be do's and don'ts? Because we're so habituated to doing the wrong thing and not doing the right thing. We need training. It's like a horse. Remember the horse analogy? A few verses back, how the mind, very conditioned mind, it's just completely habituated to focusing on something which will please the mind and the senses and avoiding all, you know, the unpleasant things. Called sankalpa vikalpa. So that mind is our worst enemy now. We're living with it. Just imagine, we're living with our worst enemy. But by good association, we can train the intelligence department to be strong, just like Vrijvasa was explaining, by studying these shastra. You're associating in the most important way with these great acharyas. You know, here's Krishna himself, you know, and these purports are written, believe me, I know how they're written, on the basis of all the great acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada's purports are written here. So you're getting that association, strengthen the intelligence to curb this horse of the mind, and direct it in such a way that you'll do activity that will awaken bhakti. That's called bhaktyun mukhi sukriti. So in that sense, there is a great distinction between piety and sin, right? When we have these four regulative principles, well, the pure devotees in Vrindavan, either on the material plane or in Goloka Vrindavan, they don't have to be told about the four regulative principles. You know, they're already there. It's not a question. Just like right here, right now, I may hazard a guess that no one is really struggling really hard to observe that regulative principle of no meat eating. Who's really having a hard time with that? Raise your hand. You know, I mean, that's the first one that's easy to follow, right? It's important. It's essential. But once you get a little bit of taste of prasadam, you chant Hare Krishna, you get association, you learn a little bit about, you know, the horrors of meat eating. It's not even attractive anymore, right? So okay, we can check that one off. You know, we have to observe the four regs. You know, but that particular one is now we got it. We got it covered. So eventually, all of them you got covered. It's not a question. You know, gambling, intoxication, and even illicit sex. You know, it's out of the question. So that's on the negative side. On the positive side, the chanting of the holy name, the hearing, you know, just imagine if we would open the Bhagavatam and it would be so attractive, it would just be like liquid nectar pouring into the ear. And you would never want to stop. You would be completely fixed on the words, and the time would just disappear. 2 hours later, you don't even know what time has gone. That's actually what's going on here, is that Parikshit is hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, and he has not eaten anything or drunk anything or slept a wink in, well, now we're in the 11th canto, we're getting up to this, you know, 6.5 days here or whatever. You know, can you imagine? And he's saying, I don't care, you know, I'm beyond it. Let the snake bird come and bite. He has a verse like that. You just go on, keep on, you know, chanting this this nectar. I'm not feeling the pinches. Just imagine a whole week, no eating, sleeping. I mean, I you know, I perform my nirjal, but I have to admit, I take a nap during the day. It becomes a little tired, you know. To stay up, the real hard part is staying up all night after a whole day of not eating or sleeping or drinking. But anyway, 7 days. So what he's living on this sound, you know, is Rasayana, Bhakti Rasayana, is a life-giving elixir. So that's on the positive side. No question of Sukriti or Dushkriti there. They're already on the spontaneous platform. But Krishna is so kind. He creates these shastra to bring anyone from the lowest platform to the highest platform. So along the way, it may seem a little puzzling. Because at one point he said that there's no piety and impiety here. And therefore Uddhava had the question. So let's focus on this verse now. So now he's saying, remember the previous verse is that someone who's awakened attraction for the narrations and knowing that sense gratification leads to misery. So we know that, you know, but how deeply do we know it? Well, we know it theoretically. That's not a question, right? We should know that by now. It's right in the Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, right? And we've experienced it to some degree. But, you know, still unable to renounce all sense enjoyment. So it's just like a drug addict. You know, he knows it's killing him, but he tries and restrain, but at a certain point, oh, you get off the wagon or whatever it is, you know. So it's a dangerous situation because you feel that there's something in the mind, something in the senses that overwhelms you. This is Arjuna's question. As if by force, against one's desire, he's forced to do something that's papa, that's sinful. Yes, and the answer, of course, is lust. Kama. But kama is not just sex desire. It's all kinds of desires that we struggle with, even though we know that they're not good for us. We know that these desires and yielding to them are impeding our progress in devotional service. And we know that at the end of the rainbow, so to speak, of this devotional service is a huge ocean of ananda. That doesn't end. We know that, right? I mean, do we doubt that by now? All of the acharyas explaining that. We've had experience, you know, you can see Srila Prabhupada in the DVDs, you can see the devotees. It's there. It's surely there. It's not some myth. And yet, the force of our habit and conditioning is so strong that at certain times we still yield to these, you know, we let the mind go like that. So that's, you know, this is why vairagya, which literally means this passion, not you know, running away from the object of the senses, but purifying one's heart to such a degree that even in the midst of the object of the senses, one is not affected. That's dispassion. That's the ultimate. That's such a central point of our practice. Attaining that, cultivating it. Vairagya-vidyanija bhakta yoga shikshartam. The Supreme Lord Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya to teach devotion to himself, characterized by vairagya and vidya, detachment and knowledge. And they go together. They go together. Without vidya, without cultivating knowledge of the shastra, studying, discussing, thinking about, contemplating, you can't come to the point of vairagya. Because the intelligence is a very important factor in what how you're going to direct your mind. If the intelligence has been saturated with ideas of sense gratification and how to achieve them, then the intelligence is just completely subservient to the mind and the senses. This is the famous chariot analogy. The soul is riding in the chariot of the body. He's sitting there, and right next to him is the intelligence. Intelligence is the chariot driver. And the reins are the mind. And the senses are the horses. So this, when the horses are out of control, they're not under the control of the mind and intelligence and the soul and ultimately the super soul, then what's actually controlling us? The objects of the senses. Because the senses have kind of built-in objects that they're attracted to, right? I mean, that's the way it is. The eyes want to see something beautiful. Touch wants to touch something soft and like that. Taste is there. There's objects. So if all you know is that, well, what's pleasing now? What's pleasing? That's more or less animal life, you know? But then what's going to happen? In the human form of life, oh, you'll figure up so many, you know, fancy ideas about how you can achieve more of that sense gratification. And the mind also has its own sense, meaning that fame, adoration, distinction, you know, the false ego can be stroked in so many ways. These are all not us. These are all external to the soul. But if we identify with them, then our whole intelligence and mind is fixed on that. And that goes on birth after birth. You know, this is the situation Prabhupada described very graphically. Krishna described, Prabhupada elaborates, the end of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, to get out of this situation, we need training. You know, the senses need to be brought under control, the mind needs to be brought under control, and the only way to do it is by strengthening the intelligence through that same old process, hearing and chanting. You know, and as Vrajabhasi pointed out, really thinking about it. You know, really meditating on it, discussing amongst devotees. That's the whole point of these classes, to discuss it. This is the greatest way in which devotees associate through Krishna Katha, discussing. You know, this is the whole idea behind the Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education and the Mayapur Institute and the Bhakti Shastri. You come together, you block out a time, the books are there, we have so many wonderful books Prabhupada has given us, and you actually think about how these things, how are they applying to me? You know? And by that contemplation, the intelligence is strengthened and you find yourself, it's easier to control the lower self. You know? How abominable it is. And you have, this word nivinna, you know? Disgusting. It keeps coming up again and again. Text 27 to 28, nirvana sarva karma su. You know, to be disgusted by it. Well, if you're really disgusted by it, you won't do it. You know? But so we want to cultivate that disgust by discussion and contemplation, and correspondingly, we wanted to cultivate the attraction to hearing and chanting. So here Krishna is saying, an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through loving devotional service as described by me. His heart becomes firmly situated in me, and thus all material desires within the heart are destroyed. Just think what a wonderful situation that would be. That as much as we're disgusted, and I can assume that, by even the very idea of eating a hamburger, you know, or any kind of meat. And just contemplate. I mean, I know myself, there was a time in my life when I wasn't disgusted by that. So at least I made that much progress, right? So imagine now if you're disgusted by sex, if you're disgusted by any even subtle deviation from pure Krishna consciousness, what a wonderful state that would be. That's the state of the great devotees. A verse comes to mind. It's a beautiful description in the same canto earlier on when the Navayogendras are teaching Maharaj Nimi about the science of bhakti. And at one point, he asks about the different levels of devotees. How do we tell who's a Mahabhagavat, who's a medium, like that, you know. So he gives the classic three verses. Sarvabhuta Yadbhukshe Bhagavad Bhavamatmaha, one who sees the Lord in everything and everything the Lord. That's the highest level. And then that very important verse, we should all know, at least the English, how does the Madhyama Adhikari, in the medium platform, deal with four essential categories of being? The Lord, the devotees, the innocent, and the envious demons. And he describes it, this Madhyama Adhikari develops devotion and love for the Lord, friendship with the devotees, compassion for the innocent who may be able to take the Krishna consciousness, and for the out and out atheist demons, he avoids them. You know, and the Kanishta Adhikari the key word there is Komala Shraddha. The faith is very weak. He can easily be deviated because he's not fixed in the Shastra. That's another way of understanding. The Madhyama Adhikari has faith in the scriptures, studies, but may not be so expert in supporting arguments and ideas from the scripture, whereas the Mahabhagavata does. But the Kanishtha, he has faith only in the deity and generally approaches the deity for some material purpose. That's piety, because it's coming to Krishna, not to some vague idea of God, but coming to Krishna. But doesn't want to stay for class, you know, doesn't have much faith in devotees, and what to speak of seeing God in everyone's heart. So at the end of this chapter, he reiterates the qualities of the pure devotee, of the highest devotee. And the first one talks about this detachment, this love for the service of the lotus feet, and the corresponding detachment from anything material. So he has this verse, Tribhuvana vibhavaheta vepakunta smita dajidama surari bhiva mringyat. Nachalati bhagavat padada vinda lavana mishada vabhyaksa vaishnavagriha. So vaishnavagriha means the foremost Vaishnava. So, now the verse, Tribhuvana vibhavaheta vepakunta, for the sake of even all of the wealth in the whole universe, all the universes, three worlds. Tribhuvana vibhava. The word vibhava is like vibhuti yoga in the 10th chapter, the opulences. So all the opulence in all the three worlds, forget about these petty little billionaires we have here, that's nothing. Indraloka, Chandraloka, Brahmala. If you can have all of that, you know. For someone whose remembrance of the Lord's lotus feet is unbroken, akunta smriti.
So Ajita
is the unconquerable Lord who is sought after by all the demigods. So the point is that all those demigods, even though they're in the heavenly planets, they're still seeking after this Lord. So they're kind of hinting at what the conclusion is going to be here. So he says, not even for a split second would the great devotees agree to forget the lotus feet of Krishna. You see? Just imagine, we're striving like anything to remember those lotus feet, remember the holy name, you know, and we're forgetting, you know, so much. But here, for this devotee, even if all of the wealth in all three worlds is offered, he won't agree to that. That's just how much attraction is. And then it goes on to explain how that remembrance of those lotus feet. Well, when you see those lotus feet, what's on the lotus feet? The toenails. And on those toenails, you got this effulgence emanating. Very important. And that effulgence is like moonshine, and it's dissipating any tinge of the stress of the burning threefold miseries. You know, the moonshine is very soothing. So he goes on to describe that. That how can there ever arise in such a heart even a tinge of suffering? Because you're experiencing that. That soothing moonshine. And then the last verse in this series, it's the last verse in the chapter, is that this devotees have tied the lotus feet to the Lord with the ropes of love. And so Krishna can never give up the heart of such a devotee. It's a very intimate relationship. It's completely personal. You know? So this is the... in that state, you can imagine, where is there any room for any material desire? It doesn't even cross the mind. That's what he's mentioning here. So that arises, you know, we can also get to that state. We should strive for that state by this process of worshipping me through loving devotion to service as described by me. And the chief means is through the hearing and chanting. Now, it's interesting that the next verse repeats, as I mentioned, a verse in the first canto, second chapter. And the same process is mentioned there. Purification, very famous, Srinvatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. By this hearing and chanting, you know, which should go on perpetually, really. It's not meant to end. If you actually hear and chant all day, then you have a good shot at remembering while you sleep. You know, because what else are you going to do? But anyway, by hearing and chanting, Krishna within the heart, Srinvatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravana. Now here's that word Punya again. You know, this is that bhakti mukhi sukriti. This is the kind of activity that awakens bhakti. Krishna calls it punya. Just hearing, you get punya. You get the best kind of punya that awakens bhakti. So punya shravana kirtana, ridyan daksto yabadrani. Krishna, who is situated in the heart, he cleanses away the abhadras, the inauspicious things, chief of which are these material desires. Because he's our best friend. Vidunoti means cleansing, suritsatam. Krishna is the best friend, especially of the of this, what does it say, the sincere devotee, or the pure devotees. So, this is sadhana, sadhana bhakti. When we start hearing and chanting about Krishna, as we're doing now, Krishna, who's in the heart and our best friend, he says, oh, Paramahansa says this on the tape, oh, they're hearing about me? So he starts clearing. This is what the Chaito Dharma Marjanam. This is the cleansing. We're not cleansing so much as doing something that pleases Krishna so that he cleanses in the heart. And by doing that, the cleansing process, at a certain point, everything is destroyed almost to nil. Remember, I chanted every class. So it's not completely pure, but it's quite purified. And then you become very convinced. It's called the Nishta platform. You get rid of the anartas, and this is Nishta. Nishta means firm faith, very firm faith. And in that state, the kama and loba are not, you're beyond the modes, you're kind of transcendental. Tadada dastamo bhava kama loba de sja. So, mode of passion, characterized by very, hard and exhausting activity for sense gratification, for money, so you can buy sense gratification. What to speak of the mode of ignorance, which is just procrastination and intoxication, and ignorance means you're ignoring. You're ignoring the reality. So those are gone. You're firmly fixed in the mode of goodness, and you're even getting into the mode of pure goodness. And then evam prasanna manaso, one naturally becomes joyful and clear in this state. Remember, our natural state is satchidananda. So evam prasanna manaso, the mind is joyful by Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, by engaging in Bhagavad Bhakti. Bhagavad Tattva Vijnana, you have a certain amount of realization. In other words, it's direct perception, pratiksha. This is Vijnana. Mukta Sangasya, and you're liberated from all material desires. And then comes this verse that we're going to read tomorrow, Vidyate Vidyagrantis. And all the knots in the heart are destroyed or cut to pieces, the doubts are completely destroyed, the karma is completely destroyed, and one sees the Lord in the heart. Mayi Drishte Kilatmi, the last line is a little different, but it's basically the same because Krishna is speaking about himself. So, in other words, one gets a vision of Krishna. He's always there, but we can't see him. Because we've drawn this curtain over our eyes, or we have these cataracts of illusion, or you could see like colored glasses, whatever it is, our vision is obscured by our own activity, and we can't see the sun in the sky. We can't see the sun of Krishna in the heart. He's always there. So this is what he's describing here in the present verse. Asakrin, constantly worshiping me. And all of those material desires get destroyed. So the trick is that when these material desires arise, we should see them for what they are, as undesirable things. Is that the mind shouldn't yield to that idea of trying to fulfill the desires, but it should yield to the think about and go to the process by which one can eliminate those material desires, or more precisely, purify them. That's the whole idea of bhakti. But in order to get to that point where you see those material desires as something that need purification rather than fulfillment, that's the whole trick. Oh, that desire is not good for me. Kama, dinam, they're my cruel masters, life after life. The different material desires, the impotences of anger and lust. Prabhupada quoted this verse by Madhavendra Puri. Kama dinam katina katita palita durnideshas. Palita means they're my masters and they're giving me bad instruction. For myself, for my degradation. We know that. So, but I've been so shameless and so foolish that I keep serving them. But they're never satisfied and they don't show me any mercy. These are not kind masters like Krishna, and Radharani and the spiritual master. They really have our best interests in mind. This is what what this institution is all about, is cultivating devotees and Brahmins who actually have the interests of others at heart, who are not simply out to exploit. In this material world, everybody's out to exploit you, but they know that that's not a very attractive thing, so they come on as wanting to serve you. That's why they have service stations. Yeah, service stations paid through the nose, $4.50 a day. A gallon. They're not there to serve you. They even appeal to your own idea of self-serve. All right, I'll serve myself. Yeah, right. First, put your credit card in. No, nobody. You know, that's why people keep coming to this temple, because there's an aura here of non-exploitation. The other night, I was out on Harinam with I tend to leave a little early. So I left with Bhakti Tim, and we were walking back, and we stopped waiting on the corner on 4th Avenue, ready to go. And this one lady came up to us, you know, we dressed as devotees, and of course we kind of blissed out from the Harinam and everything. But Tim is always like that. And but I was feeling pretty good. And so she said, "Oh, you know, you people look, you know, you're so peaceful." She really wanted to, like, you know, you're different. You know, we were trying to get her, like, we didn't have any literature trying to get her in. But so, no, I got my own yoga and this and that. She was a little, you know, sensitive to that. But you're seeing there's something different about the devotees, you know. So can you imagine if at every moment, you know, your whole being was just involved in giving? I mean, that's what it is. Bhakti, you're trying to make Krishna happy, right? That's the idea. Spiritual master, let me serve him for his interests. And let me, you know, these poor souls, they don't know anything about Krishna. Let me give them a book. Let me give them the holy name. Some prasadam, some attractive. It's all outward. You see that? It's all giving, 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 giving. That's it. And then you find yourself in complete bliss. It's as soon as you get self-centered. Am I in bliss today? Why am I in bliss today? What happened? What did I do? I. You'll never get it. Forget about yourself. Just think of Krishna. Any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. Like that song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Guru Chajipole, you know, sleeping in the lap of witch Maya.
Yes.
So the idea of the living entities in the material world being asleep, like, how would we describe that to somebody? If somebody asked, "Oh, what does that mean, that we're all asleep?" Or what does that mean? You know, how would we describe that to someone, or how we understand it ourselves, that people are sleeping?
Well, it's like this. Think of a child growing up, right? So every parent knows. I remember long ago when my first day in school. No way. You know, I was perfectly happy running around with my friends, riding my bicycle or tricycle, whatever I had, you know. In other words, to a child's mind, they don't know anything about the process of education and what, you know, in the future. It's all simply their field of vision and what's important and what's good and bad. It's like a childlike, right? And their other friends, you know, also support that, right? The other 5-year-olds, or if we banded together, we would all have an organization not to go to kindergarten. Right? We just want to play all day, right? So, but the parents understand that, no, there's something as education. That this mentality of this child is not valid. It's in ignorance. And therefore, and if you follow that system of just doing what you want to do all the time, you suffer. Right? So, but after a while in school, say after kindergarten, first grade, after all, you realize, oh, this is good. I'm learning something. There's something going on here. Right? And after a certain point, you realize, oh, this is essential. You know, so in a sense, you wake up. You wake up to the importance of a discipline to give you more knowledge so that you can live a better life. So it's like that. We're also little children here. We have no idea of what's ultimately good for us. And really, you know, sense gratification is very infantile. It means simply obeying the impulses of the senses, which is just what children do. But the whole teaching of the Vedas is that, no, there is another way of life. There is a state of existence beyond this pleasure and pain. Because children also have to wake, you know, they wake up. That's the big thing, you know. Oh, my God, there's also pain. At a certain point, my mother, nobody can help me. I just burn myself. You know, I remember, when I burned myself with some hot milk or whatever it was, or tea. You know, I was, I don't know, 7 years old. It was excruciating. I was screaming, you know. And it was just, you remember these high, you know, peak points. And that's also part of it, you know. So there's a place beyond all of this flickering little pleasure and pain where you can, you know, have a life of pure bliss and knowledge. Now, someone may not believe that, but just like the child doesn't believe that education is good, but ultimately understands it. Similarly, we adults can understand. If we wake up, you know, if we're educated, that there is a whole other world, a whole other life in which one can be truly happy forever. You know, and you can say, if there's a chance of it, isn't it worth investigating? Why reject it out of hand? You know, so then that way you can get people to get interested in your little perfection of yoga or whatever. It's difficult, you know, in the land, if you're a land of, you know, blind people, how are you going to describe the sun? You know, if someone who sees and no, this is all this, and the blind people say, oh, this heretic, he must be intoxicated, he's hallucinating. You know, or Plato's famous cave. Everybody grows up, they're just seeing the shadows, they're locked in, you know, they're in bondage. And everyone knows simply that there's these flickering shadows, and that's reality. Oh, look, there was a nice-looking shadow today. Now, that one was moving very fast, you know, they're home. That's it. And someone breaks free and gets out, and he sees the whole world out there. You know, first you can't see, the sun is blinding, and then he sees, oh my God, let's look at this. There's the ocean, there's trees, and it's the whole world. So he goes back, and they don't believe him. You don't want to believe. You don't want to believe. I mean, we find this all the time. If you meet somebody, this is why it's so important, it's better if you're younger when you get into this, because you haven't got, you know, invested so much in a false philosophy and in a false way of life. No one wants to admit that, yeah, my whole life has been, you know, wasted up to this point, and everything I believe is nonsense. No one wants to believe that. They become angry. So there's a certain fail-safe there. There's a certain resistance that develops. So it's hard to awaken. And that's why you don't, you know, blast them with the whole philosophy right away. You try to attract. You try to give them, you know, attract them with your personality, with Sunday feast, with the beauty of the paintings and the books and so forth. You know. So somehow something will get through, and the fortunate souls will be receptive to it. So, but it's different. If everybody's sleeping, then how's anyone going to wake up? So you need someone awake. That's the spiritual master comes down. The sadhus, they come down to shake us. You know, strong words. And that's it. Okay, we better end now. It's too late. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.